especially video recording, the number of things, and I've talked about this before, but like the number of things that are outside of the frame and things you don't see and all the audio that you think you're hearing, and there's so much fake in movies in order to make it real. Okay. And I've always found it so interesting. It's like, we'll fix it in post. You ever heard anybody yeah. say that? You know, the number of times you hear that on set is, we'll fix it in post. Okay.
I often wonder how many times they get there and they're like, oh shit, maybe we should have just reshot that. Like, oh.
Well, you get enough coverage. You do a couple of times and then you make sure you get the shot. But it all comes down to your camera. Who's able to go, your ADs and your, not only the director. The director is more focused on the performance. Sometimes he's looking through the lens. It really depends. But most of the time you have your camera guys are like, yeah, we got it. Don't worry. We can make that work. And you have your editor who, hopefully,
also,
if you have
making
your editor
it work. Such a fun phrase in the entertainment industry.
Well, it's, hey.
You know, you do what you can.
The worst thing in the world is have to do reshoots. Because, like, oh my gosh.
Well, it's really true. And
reset.
It's coming back later and trying to reduplicate the set. Oh.
Yeah. But I was a photographer, and so I saw that on a certain level where people would, I go, there's something's just not right. I need to fix this. And they go, and they felt rushed during the shoot, and they're like, oh, well, just fix that in Photoshop later. I realize how much time I will save myself by just moving that light a little bit right now. And then I don't have to post-process, like, 50 images of you smiling. And then, hey, can you cut that image, that smile out, and put it on my other face when I'm not smiling because my eye's not twitching? Oh, my
it's like, do you realize how much work that takes?
Also, I have a camera. Click, 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 click. 15 shots. I'm sure I can find one in there.
Photographers take so many photos.
But then
right?
again, Photoshop does do some amazing stuff. Like
it does.
I love.
You know, I actually
Photoshop
went
work.
Through a lot of post processing. I wanted to show my friends what you could do in Photoshop, and so I changed the way my nose looks. I got rid of like every blemish. I changed the color of my eyes and my hair.
So one of the funny things I see a lot of photos that are like, you know, Photoshop celebrity images, right?
Yep.
Talking about the true reality body image photos, whether they're magazine ads or like commercial things, right? And one of them was just like, say it with me, if the bricks are curvy, they cut out her waist. Because literally, like, the background was like a sine wave of bricks behind her, and you're just like, oh boy, like you.
Also, it means
that's why it's the liquify tool. You push in.
You also had a really bad Photoshop artist.
Well, and these are professional ads, right? Yeah. And you're just like, that was just careless. Like, you are just expecting people to not pay attention to the fact that you just chopped off half that woman's leg.
Most of my work...
Where did that go? About it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kate Winslet does, on a regular basis. She sued one of the publications in the UK for doing it. It might have been GQ. I don't know.
It's fun when you watch movie posters. So there was one movie that Keira Knightley was in.
It was Arthur.
Retelling of the King Arthur stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like she's flat. She's a teeny tiny
she's
woman.
Small.
She's very skinny.
Yeah. And there's a part where she has a bandage around her chest, and that's all she has on her top. And you're like, wow, I never really saw how flat she is.
Yeah.
But the movie poster, she's a fully busted woman, right?
I gave her boobs.
She's quite busty.
So I used to do that for a company. Not exactly. I used to give women. I used to do photo retouching and things like that for a graphic company. And like all the tools you do it, the key to doing that correctly is to have your work be completely unnoticed. You know,
right.
What did you do? Absolutely nothing.
Right, which is one of those funny things. You're like, that's a great photo of you. You look amazing. And it's like, do you still look like a real person?
Yep.
Do you still look like all your limbs are in the right spot?
Yeah. Do you have extra fingers on your arms?
On the face when you do the smooth over for everything.
Oh, goodness.
So, I see that in ads all the time, the weird halo
patch
effect.
Tool is the best.
Oh, yes.
For that kind of stuff.
Patch tool, spot healing.
We'll have to link to it.
I don't really like spot healing. I know this is getting into Photoshop nerdism.
Oh,
sorry.
Anyway.
Well, let's finish off with PhotoshopDisasters.com.
Yes. And it's amazing.
They just grab every, like, professional image, and they're like, oh, my goodness. And I just panned through, and there's, like, this woman with legs that are twice the size of her body, yep. And then this other woman that she's wearing a shawl, and the shawl is way too big. Like, her head is really shrunken.
It's so funny stuff.
That's one of the things you're really
well, thinking. Well, I love it because, like, everyone's seen, like, the zoom and enhance on, on like, TV shows. Where it's like, can you enhance that? CSI is the worst.
My favorite was Taken. That was a photo on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
On a phone. Oh, and he's zooming in hands, and he was able to see in a mirror on a car.
Yeah. I don't know what camera you're using.
Hey, you know what? There's an excuse for that one. It's the Liam Neeson's. The Liam Neeson's factor.
Liam Neeson's.
The Liam Neeson's factor, or the Bruce Willie factor.
Bruce Willie.
As it's also known.
Well, that's just like, I love that stuff because you sit there and, well, it's funny how entertainment informs like the normal person, you know, the unwashed matches. The number of times they, well, can't you just enhance that photo? It's like, it's not a button. It's not a real thing.
That way.
Also, you do not do Photoshop with just a keyboard. Wait, let me just do this. Click, 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 click. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you use mice in movie computers ever?
You don't really use much of anything, honestly.
No, you click. You type everything and it magic
Enter.
Stuff happens.
Enter.
I love movie computers. I want one.
Oh my god!
You know, you know what I want? I want Iron Man's computer.
The Jarvis?
No, not well. That would be great too. But
I want Jarvis.
I want the holo computer in Iron Man 1, where he's just like, okay, can you just scan that in? Bring it in. Let me use my hands.
Chick.
Okay, throw that away. I don't want any of that. I want this. Let me spin it around in a circle for the fun of it.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
and I'm like, yeah.
Big review.
Are we starting a new file? Oh, good. All right. Thank you, sir. I'm like,
yeah.
That's my computer. That's what I want. So get to work on that, computer geniuses. Okay. Also, an enhance button.
An enhance action for Photoshop.
Give me the F and any key. I have yet to find it.
Which one's the any key?
Is that an old enough joke?
That's that's a pretty old one. It's all good.
But your age is still a joke, so.
Oh!
Wow!
Sorry, I'm sorry. I apologize.
Guess who's getting kicked off the podcast?
Oh, what do you mean you got edited out of the podcast? What are all those blank sections?
What happened? I'm just going to talk as much as I can.
This big old empty podcast.
Every time you talk, I just lead it out.
Oh, goodness.
So.
Welcome to Confessions of a Game Dev podcast. Yet again, we are here to make fun of each other for your enjoyment. Today we are I can't think of the phrase because I know I'm going to get it wrong. We are joined by today.
We got a great panel
podcast,
today.
We have a great panel. How's that? Does that work?
That's pretty good.
I could be a panel.
I'll be a panel.
We have a panel.
Do you want to be a panel with
and we have a couple other people.
Can make a panel of panels.
Mm. The panel is more interesting than a board of wood.
All right.
We could be like,
these are the best intros ever.
Oh, all right. Well, so I'm here. I've already announced myself, but I'm Spencer. And so other people have to announce themselves now. That's what we do.
Okay. I'm Ashley.
I'm Brianne.
The Silent One.
And I'm also here.
Yay.
If you don't know who I am at this point, then sorry.
But if you are listening first time.
Oh, fine. Karate is also here. I got set in the corner.
I get the high
because
chair.
There's only four corners here, so everyone's in the corner.
Yes, you don't.
No one puts Ashley in the corner
except for Ashley.
Yeah, sorry, I beat you to it.
So,
in the world of game development,
what should we talk about first? Should we talk about the awesome news thing that you've got or going ons in our neck of the woods? Or
let's talk about Ubisoft.
Yeah, that's
because we also don't know the answer yet, and it'll be really interesting.
Ooh, can I go out and ask and see if we have an answer?
I don't think we have an answer yet.
I saw the Jasons come in.
I will. Yeah, I think you would have either seen a chair flown across the room by Corinne, or you would have seen her screaming at the top of her lungs and heard it.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, let's explain what's going on. So, Ubisoft had a competition with, was it like 12 different schools, something like that?
13
different schools. 17? I was so close.
Oh, maybe it was
17.
Oh, a whole bunch of schools. Throughout
Canada,
and then a couple from the U.S. One of which...
Actually, no. Only one from the U.S. The other one is the Canada campus of a U.S.
school. Oh. So, a whole bunch of Canadian schools and then us.
Yes.
Which is kind of crazy.
The only U.S. team.
The only U.S. team in the Ubisoft competition in order... The competition was to make a game in 3D that would have a 3D avatar you're following for like a third-person perspective, I guess.
Sure.
And it had to have something to do with Space the Untamed Beast.
That was the theme
of it. And, yeah, our guys just went up last week.
Apparently he finally got into the awards show.
Oh, good. Oh,
okay.
Roger.
Roger and Andrew are in the awards show.
We're live tweet streaming exactly what they say.
Instagram following them.
Oh, you're on Instagram.
This is crazy.
No, I'm on Facebook. So.
Okay, I'll follow.
But they went up last week. They stayed in this awesome hotel that Troy was talking about with bear rugs and all kinds of...
Really?
No, bearskin blankets.
Bearskin blankets.
And the robes.
Bear robes.
They're the accent on the end of the bed.
Oh, okay.
So anyway.
But so bear robes.
All kinds of awesome stuff. And they went to the competition, they presented, they each had to do personal presentations of what they did on the game, and then presentations of the game itself, and they came back.
But what are the prizes?
There's not really a prize.
It's a prize.
It's more, well, I guess.
I think it's a really neat...
The winning team gets to, the entire team gets to have an internship at Ubisoft where they go make this game
Montreal.
With two other members from each of the other schools.
It's called Ubisoft Summer School.
Yeah, Ubisoft Summer School. Well, you go and you make this game into a reality.
And actually, I was looking at their site earlier. They actually have a couple of different levels of camps, just information on Ubisoft. They have a 12 to 18, I believe, camp. And they also have the 18 to 25 session. So they have a couple of different options for learning how to be a game developer in
also,
Canada.
Also, seemed oddly biased against people who are not 25 or younger.
Yes.
I'm out.
It was a little on the unfair side.
So I thought it was interesting, though.
How old's Troy? Sorry, we shouldn't discuss that here.
I think he's less than 25.
He's about...
Isn't he?
Troy?
No.
He's 126.
All right, so...
He's wise.
38.
All y'all's Gavins. What I thought was interesting was we were the first U.S. one, because it's generally the Montreal, which is where Ubisoft is, even though they have stations in the U.S. Studios. But they told us that they loved the fact that we had a track for producers. That was one of the main reasons. So they wanted that, because the majority of the schools that they've had doing this in the past were art-specific or engineering-specific.
They're not for production as a team based, as we've covered many times before, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The U is specifically about production as a team. Mm-hmm. And also I think that they're doing it to increase their international presence as a, outreach thing.
Yeah. Because
can you imagine if EA held a summer camp for game development here in Salt Lake? That'd be pretty sweet.
It'd be insane.
It would be awesome.
Also, they need a lot more space.
That one's for free, yeah. EA.
Yeah. We know that they're steady listeners of our podcast. Yes, so.
I know. Well,
which is why I don't sure have a job show. There.
So anyway, but I thought it was interesting. If we find out during the podcast, we'll let you know who won.
I'll be watching Twitter.
Or if we won or if we didn't, because I don't really know any of the other teams.
But even if we don't, the students that participated do have a shot at getting one of the additional internship spaces that they still have open. I think they have about 30.
Well, there's 2
spaces.
Per team.
It's 2 per team.
Ish.
I've heard that is no longer guaranteed.
There's also a lot of teams.
But yes.
So. Well, we'll see. They have a chance at it. So that's
that was the initial.
Pretty awesome.
Whatever happens. I don't know. But it is at least one.
Yeah.
But we'll all bring on the edges of our seats.
We'll have to bring a couple of them on and talk to them on that experience. Andrew, I'm sure, would love to tell us more.
He's a good talker.
So.
Roger, I've got a tweet. Roger is sitting down with me at Consolo as we speak.
Oh, of course.
Those are BFFs.
It's pretty awesome.
She's been commenting on his Facebook.
Now, okay, I'm going to segue here. Ready?
Yeah.
Speaking of Ubisoft.
Oh.
that
one actually was okay.
I know. That's not too bad, right?
Like, you didn't...
It's a normal segue. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just as an aside, my segues are actually quite good. Okay.
Yeah. As a segue to that,
as a segue.
Ubisoft, what do they do?
Ubisoft had confirmed they're going to do Splinter Cell Blacklist for the Wii U. Okay. The reason why Ubisoft is developing Splinter Cell Blacklist, it's the new Splinter Cell, and it's going to be on the Wii U, and it's going to be the really good version. Now, I was playing the other Ubisoft Wii U title yesterday, Zombie U, which I find interesting but a little boring. Like we could talk about that for a while, but that's a. I basically wanted to play it because of a talk that we heard at GDC.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, I see why this would be really interesting, and why I don't like it at the same time. So I haven't finished yet. I don't want to, you know, bash it. Without,
I need to actually play spoilers. It because I was it's basically just game. Watching him play it, and he's boring to watch.
That's
so
true. I'm a terrible survivor. Can we talk about how terrible?
But I play the same way you do.
Zombie
so
protagonist
I'm boring to watch.
Survivor, I'd be.
Okay. No, dude, tell us.
Okay, like, I was talking to this about Ashley, with Ashley. Zombie movie protagonists, in order to be interesting, are the dumbest people on the planet.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Look, there's a dark corridor. Let's go out of it. Yeah. Let's go outside.
Or they're surrounded by idiots, which gets them killed.
Yes.
Because that one, the one woman in The Walking Dead. No, not The Walking Dead. The Romero. Is it Romero?
I don't know which one you're talking about. Evil Dead?
No, the lives like the first
The Living Dead?
The Living Dead.
The Night of the Living Dead.
The Living Dead. The Walking Dead. The Evil Dead.
The Dead.
What?
Dead.
The Dead Dead.
Yeah. Also, Deadhead of the Dead.
We're totally making the game The Dead Dead.
The Dead Dead. it's a rather boring game.
Anyways, you walk around a cemetery.
There was people in there. There were characters in there that were really, really smart. And then you get paired up with the guy that's like, oh no! The gas tank has a lock on it. Let me shoot it with my shotgun.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and that's an actual scene. Like, they have a chance to get a vehicle to get away.
Moron.
And he drives it to get gas it up, and he points a shotgun right at the lock, point blank, and then fires thinking he can knock the lock off so they can gas up.
Yeah.
And that was like their lesson. So yeah, you can still be smart, but you've got to be around dummies.
Well, that's what would bother me is that, like,
even then,
when I play these games, I'm a survival. You know, player. Yeah. I will backtrack forever in order to keep certain resources. I will check every single door, every multiple times, every window, every everything. And then I get really annoyed. There's a scene in Zombie U where I had checked everything in this entire vicinity.
You did.
Okay. I went everywhere. And I took forever doing it. And I walked to this door, I opened the door, and alarm goes off. And all of a sudden, six zombies appear behind me out of nowhere. I'm like, they weren't there! There was nothing there at all! There's no way they could have... They were just like hiding in the brick.
Actually, I would say that that's more of a testament to the expectation of the development company in what a player is going to
yes.
do. Most players are not going to be as cautious and as careful as you
of
were.
Of course, exactly.
And honestly, that makes me a little sad about the future of games. You know? Because you want to make games that are... player proof, right?
Yeah.
Like, you want to protect against that. But at the same time, you want to make games that reward
smart play.
Players,
yeah,
right?
Like, I mean, you should be able to prepare your way through things.
My favorite part of this all is he was running away from a horde of zombies, went to open a door, and it was loading.
Oh, gosh.
And so he could not escape
yeah.
to this door because Wait, it was loading.
Was there a loading?
There was yeah, no, oh, okay. a little loading icon
so,
at
like,
the bottom
there,
so you loading
shortcut
the next
room.
Area.
Okay, short. The game uses shortcuts. They're manholes. Like, basically, apparently zombies don't infest the sewers in this game. So, whatever.
Oh. Huh,
okay.
Like
apparently, they don't like it's too disgusting for the zombies. But
no, the rotting undead
anyway,
don't like it.
But so there's a safe zone. Basically, you come out of the supermarket and you have to get back to your shortcut in order because like there's a horde there. There's no way you can. I guess you could technically, theoretically, fight your way through it.
You did,
but you're not supposed to. Like, you're supposed
die.
To run. You're supposed to run for it, right?
Yeah.
And so I run to this thing. I get under the fence. I get to the door. Click. Loading. It doesn't pause the game to load it. They're behind me.
So he was stuck in his alleyway, surrounded by zombies, while he's waiting for the door.
And
to
I get bit, going open the effing door.
Oh my!
And the thing is, I told Ashley that this was going to be a problem earlier because I left it open on purpose. I left the door open. I'm going. This is going to be an escape route later. Watch. You trust me, and it's going to be closed, and it's going to screw me over, and it totally
yeah.
did. I was yep. like, when the. It's kind of weird being a developer playing games.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I understand the technical limitation of this. At the same time, this should have been different.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have a loading area where you need to escape quickly. Like,
yeah.
that's bad design.
Yeah.
Well, I was playing Bioshock and was you know, you get in the original.
Okay.
No, but you get in that chamber that, you know, the big areas are always this separating chamber.
Sure.
and you get in there and the door won't close and you're like, oh piss, oh piss. You know, you're there's definitely this tension. You're like, they're so gonna get me, I can hear them coming, I can hear them coming, I'll just get in the door. And you get in the door and it cuts, right? Yeah. I mean, it gives you some tension, and I think they knew what they were doing, but at the same time, they know they're not gonna screw you.
Yes.
Like sticking you in a tuna can and saying, okay, you got it.
Yeah.
You know? And they always pull you out the last second. But, like, that just sounds like,
well,
I don't know.
You should never have the, like...
It wasn't a very player, large area either, which is what was boggling us as well.
The player should never be able to blame the game for losing. Sure. That's just a big problem with any of this kind of stuff. It's just like, if it's the game's fault, then it's not the player's fault, and you've ruined that immersion. Yep. The player can no longer go, oh, I did work. I didn't do as well. It's the game is cheating. And it's when that transparency is made manifest, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So.
And that was definite blame the game moment.
I was so upset.
All right. Annoying.
Anyway, but the reason I bring up the Wii U, I guess, is that like Vita is beating the Wii U in Japan. Which is interesting because like.
Which is ridiculous. Nintendo is massive in Japan.
Yeah, but and the Vita isn't selling anything here in the U.S. Vita had a recent price drop in Japan, which is really interesting. So that's partially the reason. But at the same time, all these Wii U releases, they're trying to make such a big deal. Like you do advertisement when there's a Call of Duty game on the Xbox. Yeah, but you're not going to have a news article on this is an amazing thing that's happening. You know,
there's always a Call of Duty
news articles that Wii U is getting support.
Yeah.
Really, you should buy one. We should really want you to buy a Wii U.
Like I said, until there's a Pokemon Snap, I will not be purchasing a Wii U. That console was made for a Pokemon Snap. I've been waiting since the N64 for another Pokemon Snap, and there better be one for this Wii U.
That one's free, Nintendo.
So
that's free for you, Nintendo. So happen to come across this podcast, make a Pokemon Snap.
So that's... And so, like, transitionary, we're going to keep doing this, but, like, two interesting console things that are coming up, more independent stuff. The Ouya had some lag issues with their controller to the system, which is they're promising to fix before their release in June. And at the same time, the demand for the Android-powered game stick. So the game stick console, it's basically, I don't know, how big did you say it is? Like, it's a USB drive and a controller.
It's literally a USB drive and a controller. But it's an HDMI.
Yeah. Plug. Oh, it's HDMI.
It's actually HDMI, but it's about the size of the USB.
It's not big. It's a really small thing. And basically, there was so much demand for it that they had to delay it until May.
Here's the thing. There's not a lot of demand for it.
Apparently, they had enough pre-orders.
It's Kickstarter-based, so they're fulfilling backer rewards.
Yeah.
And so, I'm going to pull it up right now because I don't believe that it's actually that successful. Because when I was looking at it like halfway through, the amount of money, if you just took the amount of money and put it on the scale of every one of those persons spent enough money to get an actual game stick and not just sit on, give me a t-shirt, it looked like they had an order of about 700. It was really, really small. Quantity, where when you looked at Ouya, they had like tens of thousands of orders that they had to fulfill.
Yeah.
And they were going to be able to. But, for some reason the game stick did not seem as promising, and then this happens, and let me tell you my opinion on this, which is there's a lot of stuff going out on Kickstarter, and there's usually one that does it, and then other people follow suit.
Of course.
Right? And these guys that follow suit don't realize all the costs that they're going to incur. Mm-hmm. They didn't realize. They're like, oh yeah, we could totally shop this out and at any old place. And they didn't do their homework the way Ouya did their homework.
Yeah.
Which is, I think that shone through, which is why they were more successful. I think that's why these ones that do something really phenomenal on Kickstarter, you can tell when they do their homework and when they don't.
Sure.
And when they just say, hey, we're going to make this game, it's going to be so awesome, we only need $40,000. Like, There's a movie on there that actually sounds really cool. Their pitch sounds wonderful. They're asking for $45,000, and they want a full-scale...
A feature film? Never going to happen.
That's exactly... Like, I don't know anything about film.
You're
going
to have to, drop down to Blair Witch Project status. Well, did Will something? Yeah.
So, like, pop quiz, how much is a Red camera?
pretty pricey. I don't know the stats on hand, but I mean, when I was at school at the U, we got the first one in Utah, and it was, I may be very wrong, so somebody should correct me, but it's at over $100,000.
Yeah, and they want to do this on 45.
Oh, really?
No, that's on 45 film? Handheld camera Blair Witch 45 is fine. Status.
45 is not a big deal.
45,000?
Oh, no, 45 grand. Oh, I thought you were talking about 45 film.
No, they want to do this whole film on 45, and they're in their video, they're like, we're going to do this, and it looks really cool. Like, I want this to succeed, but I just don't think it will.
The only possibilities I can think of, if you, like, for example,
unless when they already have the equipment.
Yeah, if they have the equipment already, then they're fine.
And they might have access to, like, say, a school studio, right? Mm-hmm. Which they would have access to a lot of additional equipment that they wouldn't have to fund themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe they can make it happen. But there's still a lot of logistics required to managing that stuff. And the time and the man hours.
And even Pulse, IGF student game that was one of the finalists. I wish I could pull it up, but my phone died. But their 30 days is coming up to an end in a couple days, and they're not going to meet their goal. Mm-hmm. They're on track not to meet it, I should say. They may. And it's unfortunate, but it's like, that's an amazing game, and it's an IGF nominee, but I think the luster is starting to wear off on Kickstarter, and we're starting to be a little more savvy. Like, you can't just say, I'm going to make Unicorn Poop, and it's going to happen. You actually have to show that you have the skills too, and the execution.
The initial charm, it's the initial charm run has kind of made its course.
Yeah.
Once that thing has kind of gone, okay, now we actually have to work for this. Okay, fine. But at the same time, I don't think it's gone. It's just, you always have to do your homework. That's the thing of any of this stuff.
Well, you do, but, and that's why, like, in the first year, there's all these stories of the A2 pen, 2A pen or something. Yeah. And there's, you know, and honestly, I'm afraid to go back to Kickstarter and look at all the ones that have funded, that I've paid for, because I'm pretty positive most of them I have not seen anything from them.
Yeah.
Except for Ouya.
See, I love Kickstarter, and I've funded a lot of things. And I would say I've gotten at least everything that I have funded, I have seen something from, except for one project that I know I have not gotten the item I requested, or that was my reward. And again, there are a lot of projects that I also funded to the point where I didn't get a physical reward. I got a download or something like that. But that's also a part of being a savvy Kickstarter backer, is knowing what you're getting is achievable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not paying to get a 3D model printed and painted and shipped to me in one piece, because that wouldn't happen.
Right.
And knowing what you can and can't get. But one of the big problems with Kickstarter right now is that the market is being saturated, and finding projects that are well-researched, that they are supported by people who have the experience to actually accomplish what they're doing, and they're not just shooting for the stars. Mm-hmm. It's harder and harder to find these things, and there are still some good ones out there, but it's harder.
Funny enough, that's investment, right? That's the whole thing is that, like, initially these were people, very entrepreneurial people who, I mean, there still are on Kickstarter, but, like, initially that's all you had with entrepreneurial people. It's like, we know what we're doing. This is a way we can take advantage of this. And because Kickstarter is now it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Now you have, well, we'll just put it on a Kickstarter.
No, totally.
And then because of an issue. It's
And I had someone that wanted me to make a game for them, and they're like, and I said, how do you guys want to fund this? And they're like, oh, well, you run the Kickstarter. It's like, well, if I'm going to run the Kickstarter to give all the money to you so you can give it back to me in milestone increments, why don't I just do it myself?
Yeah.
You know, like, that was one thing. But then also, I was floored at their perception of Kickstarter, which was, what's your guys' marketing plan to get this out? They're like, oh, no, that's not how Kickstarter works. You just put it up there and people give you money.
No, that's
and
not.
And it's like, no. And it, you know, and like,
Kickstarter is a crowdfunded investment platform that you really should research and promote yourself accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, if you're.
And there's also a lot of legal issues when it comes to Kickstarter.
Yeah. Well, and there's a large portion of things that you really have to do your research on, that you're giving essentially 10% of your funds to Kickstarter and taxes.
Yeah.
And
10% to Kickstarter.
Well,
up to 30 to
up taxes. To 30 to taxes, right? It depends on how much you raise.
Right.
And it depends on what your goals are.
Exactly.
Small projects, it's going to be less. Big projects, you're looking at a lot of money going to taxes. I mean, when you raise over $1 million, you're going to lose a lot of money to the government.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden, you only have $70,000 to build something that you thought you had, yeah. you know, $300,000 plus whatever. And you're just like, where did all the money go?
Yeah.
And you're like, you had to pay for fees, you had to pay for man hours, you had to pay for taxes, you had to pay for construction costs.
And the
and
rewards.
Shipping. Yeah. And shipping is something that Kickstarter's done a lot of promotion on their end because they want people to succeed to be like, look, do your math.
Yeah.
Figure out what you're going to need for real.
You need financial people in your Kickstarter. And, it's not a...
And well, and that goes for, like, on a development side, every single time, like, I really wish they had a few more business classes for the producers.
Sure.
Because when you think about the cost of shipping and production of a game, I know next to nothing about it right now. And I can figure it out. Well, I would be fine.
Okay, do you guys want a real-world experience of this?
But if I wanted to be indie, it would be a huge shock.
You, yeah. wouldn't be shipping, you'd be downloading.
But even still, like, the, anyway, sorry, the notion of shipping. Right.
Right.
So that's a really funny thing. So this week, Ashley and I are working as a team, a larger group, for Bench to Bedside, which is a mm-hmm. thing that entrepreneurs, medical side of campus is putting together. And we have to put it used to be hardware-only devices that would basically solve medical problems. So the idea was doctors have these issues, engineers and smart people from other departments came together, built something, and solved a problem for the medical field. Well, now they're like, oh, why don't you guys make a game? And so they added, you know, you can have a software-based solution to this. And so we've made a game, and I'm wrapping up all the numbers, and they're like, what's your market? I'm like, I don't know. And so I, you know, pull a number out of my butt of who I'm going to sell this to. And then they're like, how many of those are you going to sell to? I'm like, I have no idea how to measure that, you know? And then it says, what's your ROI versus your, what's your cost break-even point? And I'm like, what the crap? So I called up a buddy that's doing an MBA, and I was like, I don't know how to figure these numbers out. He's like, well, tell me how much it's going to cost you to run your development house. Tell me how much you're going to spend on marketing and what was this other number. And he's like, let me help you figure out the market number. But you give me those three numbers, I will tell you all those other numbers that they want. And within 30 minutes, he'd gotten all of them. And the funny thing was the marketing number. And I'm like, if I really want to do this right, especially as a mobile app, my discovery is huge and it's going to cost a lot of money. So I want marketing budget of $100,000. And he's like, okay, if you do a marketing budget of $100,000, your ROI is negative 12%. And I'm like, dang it! Which is return on income.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh. He's like, I'm going to make it $10,000. I'm like, no, that's not going to get us crap. He's like, I know, but your ROI is going to look really good. And so, like, he helped me get those numbers out, which was like, oh my gosh, I never would have gotten through this, and I needed this, and I'm so glad I have someone like that I can turn to. And maybe in somewhere down the road, I'll be able to figure all that out and answer those questions myself. But I don't think that we should be afraid to talk to him.
Well, of course not.
This is that indie feeling, right? It's like, as an indie, I should be able to do this all myself.
Sure.
And I think that's just garbage. I think
the correct attitude should be, I need as much help as I can get.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
But, you know, you go watch Indie Game the Movie, and those guys are, you know, the Phil Fishes and the Jonathan Blows.
I don't feel like that is an accurate depiction of the independent community.
But it isn't, but it's the exact same problem about what we were saying, that media informs how we zoom and enhance on
exactly.
movies, or on shows. So, like, that movie is so wildly successful that anyone wanting to get in this industry is going to be this hard-ass...
I can kickstart an indie movie, right?
Dude, we should totally do that.
We should kickstart an indie movie about Kickstarter. Ready?
Also, we're going to call it Meta Kickstarter.
that one's for free.
Kick your ass starter.
So one of the things in my undergraduate, I have my undergraduate degrees in theater, and one of the classes that we were required to take is, for my particular track, was theater management. Because I think it's some exorbitant number, like 75, 80%, maybe up to 95% of all theaters fail within the first year because a whole bunch of actors get together and say, let's make a community theater and we'll rent out a space and we'll throw on a show because we have a long history in entertainment of saying that you can do that, right? Yeah. And that if you do a good enough show, you'll survive. The truth is, if you don't have the financial savvy and backing to make a business run, you're not going to make a theater survive.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that goes into being a business owner, into being a landlord, essentially, if you're renting out to other spaces, if you're using it for other things. And honestly, the logistics of putting on entertainment and having refreshments and having all of these things that go into having running this business, not to mention planning your first season, the cost, hiring actors, what it costs to buy a show to put on. Like, there's all these built-in costs that, as an actor, you don't think about. And the same goes for entertainment and development, because you're like, yeah, I can live in my basement. How much is it going to cost you to live in your basement and also pay for electricity and keep the water running? Mm-hmm. And how much is it going to cost to keep the internet on so you can research things and talk to other people? And how much is it going to cost for you to hire somebody else to do anything you can't do?
I think we have a problem in...
We don't think about it
in
much.
In the industry. Well, I mean, in a lot of industries, creatives have a problem with non-creatives.
Sure.
Okay. There's something there, which is actually one of the interesting parts about like being a producer is that you have, you know, going through GDC, sometimes you say a producer and you watch their eyes just kind of like, oh, you know. You're the non-creative, which is fine. You know, it's fine because like you can still contribute, of course. But the thing of it is, that's not your thing. I'm a non-creative. That's the biggest
issue. It actually amuses issue. Me because in our department, because the producers tend to be designers and we tend to be collaborators so adeptly with the artists and the engineers.
You guys do art.
And right, like
awesome art.
Half you know, of our producers buildings. Spent the morning modeling things, right? We do a lot of creative work in our track here, and we work really closely with our artists and our engineers. And so whenever people are like, they're the non-creatives, right? Like, you're the business people. And I'm just like, are you kidding? I've done more creative stuff this way than...
But be that as it may, it's just like,
but it's
there is a dynamic back and forth of like, use the ones who make things and here's the ones who get in the way, you know?
They're the people that tell me, no, we can't afford it.
Yes. And then creative individuals, I completely understand the idea of, oh, well, I don't need those people because I'm creative. You know, they don't see things the way I see them, but there's a reason why there's the hacker hustler dynamic, right?
Yeah.
You have the hacker who's going to make the thing. You have the hustler who's going to go
sell it.
Let me do what you can't do, you know, and that you have to have people who are going to disagree with you, who are going to, you know, keep you on track, you know, anything.
Sure.
You need those kind of individuals who are going to be the hard ass. They're going to say no. We're going to say we can't afford that, you know, but no, we can do this on dreams and rainbows. It's like, no, you can't.
And the fact is,
not unless there's a lot of cash on those dreams and rainbows.
I was going to say, unless you really do have an angel investor, whether it's your parents or somebody swooping in from, you know, Google to save you and create it, you're not going to get
angel
it.
Investor?
But well, no, actually, so here's the thing. I shouldn't say Google or whatever, but remission is a cancer game,
yes,
right? Yeah. For kids, tell kids take their medication. And if you look at how that Hope Labs was funded and created, created, a certain wealthy person's wife decided that she wanted this to happen and made it. Like, she's like, this is the business we're creating. Here you go. Have money. Make this thing I want. And, you know, that's an angel investor, right? Is the spouse of somebody who made a lot of money and that they have the financial leeway to do that. And unless you have that sort of backing, it's going to take a lot to keep the lights on.
Right.
And generally, we think, I mean, whether it's because we're just out of college or we literally have just moved out of our parents' houses, for some of us still living in our parents' houses.
Yay.
And it makes financial sense for a long time because if you can, why not?
Yeah. Save money.
But the fact is, as you get older and as you get into heavier development processes, life changes, things happen, and you're going to have to learn how to make the lights stay on all by yourself at some point. And whether it's at work or at home, managing that budget is a shock for a lot of people. Because especially if you look in the entertainment industry, in video games, there's a lot of stories of fortunes won and lost, right?
Sure.
Somebody made $1 billion on a game, and then they spent it on fast cars and huge studios, and they crashed and burned.
Romero!
And, a couple times, you know.
But there's also hundreds of stories of people going, I'm going to make it big. Maybe they even got some funding, and then they spent it on fast cars and crashed and burned and never made the
thing they were supposed to. Never made the money back, and then they never got hired to make another game.
Well, the unfortunate reality is, like, and again, you need, sometimes you need adults if you want to play the games.
Well,
you know?
So I had this discussion with some undergrads. I helped top teach Corinne's class about video games. We watched Indie Game the movie, and I said, you guys, what does it mean to be an indie game developer? It means you can do whatever you want. It means you don't have to answer to no one. And I'm like, bullcrap. You know, I was like, you're a one-man team. I get it. But you're still answering to an audience.
Well, and it actually means that you have to be more disciplined than if you were to work in a studio.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
very much so.
Working in a studio, they have built into their budget, believe it or not, time for you to play Facebook games. They have built in for time for you to check your email, for time to have some downtime, for you to talk to your coworkers. This is what it's part of being a big business.
Yeah.
And they plan for it. They budget for it. They have the time built in. They have the money built in. As an independent developer, you don't have that luxury ever.
No.
Because every minute you don't spend on it is probably should be spent sleeping, eating, going to the bathroom, and showering, right? Because you're literally spending money on yourself. Every development minute you're spending not making money for somebody else, you're spending money on yourself.
Yeah. Well, and so
you just don't have the luxury
Look at Phil Fish on Indie Games. He mentions numbers, and he says something like $200,000, $300,000. And it's like, where did he get that money from? He was answering to VCs.
Yep.
Someone gave him that money, and someone just is, you know, even if some spouse gives you $50 million to make remission, you're answering to her. And if she doesn't like it, they get to drop the hammer on
you. Yep.
Right, and you know what? They did a really good job in moving Serious Games forward, and they made a big splash. They had the funds to do it. They've done a lot of work, and they're making Remission 2, and it's coming out relatively soon. They're doing testing right now in the area, but in a couple different hospitals. But the fact is they have to make money back to continue the lab, right? Her money isn't going to last indefinitely.
Right.
And so at some point, you need that seed money, but until you have the discipline to create a good product on a good timeline, you're not going to be a successful business.
Which is sad. I mean, this is all, like, the first day of business.
This reminds me of a very first GDC talk when it was fracked. And I was like, how are you still alive?
Yeah.
That was so frustrating.
So at Fracked, he gave himself a development window of a year, right?
Yeah.
And it's been 2 years now, and they have not yet released it. And they've had him and his wife have had a child now, and they're severely strained in the financial areas, and they have a ticker. The clock is ticking down the minutes that they have left before he really has to get a real job or make this work.
Yeah. But then
and
I
that's
asked
a
him,
lot of pressure.
But then I asked him, I said, when are you going to call this done? And he's like, my wife goes insane. And I thought, that's funny to say, but that really is a horribly unquantifiable time frame for you to do this. Okay, let's look at Notch. He pushed out an alpha game and sold it, and people were buying it hand over fist.
Sure.
Well, he funded his own development.
Well, he did. But what's funny is he called a date, and he just put out whatever he had, is my opinion. He put it out. People ate it up anyways. Like, who's to say that Fracked couldn't sell today as is?
Well,
I don't know.
That's also, you get into the creative development cycle, right? I mean, we've talked about this before. I talked about this with Ashley and other artists, too. It's like, sometimes art is never done.
Yeah.
You know, art will go on forever until someone says, no, stop it.
Yeah. And I think you just need to be...
you run out of supplies, and you decide you have to eat, so you sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
no, and honestly, coming from fine art, that was definitely... But also, I mean, you want to know something that we can all shake our heads at. Every day at Fine Art, I pleaded that they would discuss finances and business side of things with us. And I've heard of other schools doing it, and they were like, we refuse to do that because if you make good enough art, it'll sell itself.
Yes.
And you'll be totally fine. You just need to worry about making better art because you suck at it.
And that's not true.
That is totally, it's terrible.
Discovery is terrible. Very important, as well as marketing and perception.
Absolutely. And that's what was funny is, like, we'd have visiting artists come from New York, and they would tell us this. They're like, how many things have you made? Well, I've made 3 for this class, 3 for that. She's like, so you have 6 things to sell at the end of your graduation to start selling. She's like, you basically have a runway of 6 items that you can sell, assuming people want to buy those 6 items. She's like, why aren't you making 25 a semester? Because you're giving yourself a longer runway. And I'm like, oh my gosh, why has no one told us this? This like, makes so much sense.
Well, it's the same thing as, it's like, are you going to open a store and stock it with 6 items to sell?
Absolutely.
And it's like, whoa.
Absolutely.
You know.
Spencer's store will not last very long.
No, and that was her point. I totally dropped chocolate.
It's okay.
So, question, how do you make this chair go down? Because it is the most uncomfortable chair on the planet.
Totally. No, that's totally, I'm doing it for you guys. That the creative person needs to realize, like, content is king, and quantity of content is kingier.
Kingier?
Kingier, more king.
Emperor?
Is emperor?
Is more superior?
Is far superior to content that...
Well, see, good content will sell itself, right? It does. But it needs a push. It needs a push from somebody.
Needs to be discovered.
Yeah, like, you can have, like...
I've seen some bad content.
Ready for a metaphor?
No, all right, okay. Let's hear it.
The biggest diamond in the world cannot be found unless somebody digs it up.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay?
I can't repeat that metaphor, but I'm not sure what it's...
You can have this awesome diamond, right? If it's completely underground, what good is it?
So here's the continuation of that metaphor. As you dig it up, it's a rock.
Yeah, it's true.
And nobody's going to buy that diamond from you, like, at a jewelry store, until it's been cut and edited, basically, down to where it's actually something pretty. And that process of so many artists, developers, people who want to be creative, say, here's this thing, and I loved it, and I put my heart into it, and I worked really hard, and look at it. And you're like, well, okay, it needs some editing. Yeah. And everybody gets upset about needing to be edited because, of course, they're the best, they're the genius, they figured it out. And I'm like, you know, the best-selling authors have millions and millions of readers. They still have excellent editors.
Yeah.
You know, they have the best editors money can buy because they know that they might have a good product and it's going to be better with a better publisher, a better promoter, a better editor. Yeah. And it's like having those support systems in place to be able to edit and manage your content is vital for the development process. And we lose that in the creation process. We lose focus a lot.
And that's just a testament. We could go on this for a while, but I think we could.
Yeah, we could. And we should.
Let's move on a little bit. A couple of things I want.
Your soapbox.
No, I mean, it's a common topic we talk about and things that I think.
It's not a soapbox. Important. It's my house. I'm throwing stones from the inside.
Now coming down. Now this is interesting. Okay, here's my ready. So next, another segue. Coming from corporate stuff on top of development, right? And corporate versus creative. EA was just voted the worst company in the world again.
Oh my goodness!
Okay, now
what is this according to? I still don't know. It's an internet poll.
It's an internet poll by consumerist.com, which tracks all kinds of things.
That makes a lot more sense now because people usually aren't aware of a lot of the other companies that have committed heinous crimes against their
The problem about this whole deal is that, number one...
I was like, this got worse than Bank of America and a few others that have done some pretty terrible
things. Yes, and that's what Consumerist talks about. And the more interesting thing about this is that, this is the first time any company's won it twice, let alone twice in a row. Okay.
For you.
Peter Moore let it. Well, actually, they do, and that's what's more interesting. Actually,
is what
is that they do care.
Yeah.
EA put out. This is Peter Moore putting out a press release talking about the tallest trees catch the most wind. Mm-hmm. You know, and basically because we're visible, we're doing. You know, we have made mistakes. Don't get me wrong.
They're a video game giant.
Yes, they are the video game. Okay.
As long as the industry has been around,
they're easily. I would say they're the biggest video game company.
In the world right now.
Publisher, yeah.
If you look at numbers, they're comparable to Activision. They're both.
Yeah. They're huge.
You get those two, and then.
We'll take Activision and split off Blizzard a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
You know, you have Blizzard, and then also Activision is there. But anyway, what I'm saying is but EA has done this, and they do care. If Bank of America had won, had anyone ever heard of this poll before EA won?
No. I never heard of it until last year.
It's been going on for a long time. I don't have the notes. It's been going on for years. Okay.
Yeah.
And other people have won. BP won. Halliburton won. RIAA won.
they didn't last.
Okay. But what I'm saying is that it's not necessarily that EA is the worst company in America. is that they're the most visible bad company. Not bad. I don't want to say that they're a bad company. What I'm saying is, like, their mistakes.
The most visible company that their own consumers are currently upset with them.
Yes.
And they have
consumers are on the internet.
But yeah. That's the key. Because I know lots of Bank of America customers are really upset with Bank of America. Lots of customers who aren't Bank of America customers are upset with Bank of America. Those people are not spending their time reading internet polls.
Exactly.
They're spending their time.
People like 4chan who are screwing the crap out of this.
But also, right? Who's the customer? Who's the customer of EA?
Gamer.
There's a direct consumer that we can identify as a gamer. Who's a direct customer of Bank of America?
Mortgage owners.
People that invest money or that seek loans, right?
Yeah.
Who's the customer of Halliburton? Every person that gasses up their car. No. Every person that uses oil products.
But Halliburton is not the face of that product.
No.
But they're definitely, I think that's what's so silly about this is...
Well, this is a PR poll.
It's totally a PR poll, but it's definitely, like, the people that are going to always be the top 10 or the top 4, I think it's bracketed like a final, like the
it's a tournament bracket. Tournament,
are always going to be the people that are closest to their consumers, closest to their customers, right?
Yes.
So Halliburton, yes. You know, like, okay, Dorkley's response, fake EA response.
I love that
I'm going to read that because they're part of it. Well, you got us consumerist. We are the worst company in America, worse than Halliburton, worse than ExxonMobil, since, as everyone knows, releasing a bad SimCity game with iffy support was far more horrible than poisoning entire community groundwater spilling 300,000 gallons of crude in the middle of Arkansas. Thank goodness you let a bunch of nerds angry about the ending of Mass Effect 3 decide that poor video game development is a worse corporate crime than literally causing the deaths of untold numbers of wildlife and irreparably destroying the environment. Great call, guys.
Well, but what's interesting, it is really interesting, and it's very satirical. I love Dorkley's responses to things. They're interesting. It's something that, like, EA is worried about this because they are so tied to their brand image. We talked a few weeks ago about Google and Apple has their, like, the most trusted brands in America, and there's, you know, something about that. Because tech companies are very much on the pulse of their customer base. Yeah. Okay. EA, and this is what's interesting, is that EA has had a really hard time transitioning, you know, right now in the mobile space, right now in all the different spaces and all these things. It feels like they are abandoning their core demographic, right?
Mm.
Okay. Not completely, obviously. They're trying to do these things, but it's because you have marketing things saying things that the brand isn't being managed properly. Okay?
Yeah.
The brand is going, this is what we want to represent. And then you have personal reactions. Because it's a tech company, you have personal interaction with your customers. You have this very, you know, that's the whole part about it, that are saying other things. This is actually ties directly. I'm going to move on because we're going. I'm going to move on to the Roth email or the Roth Twitter.
Forth. Not Roth. Sorry.
Oh, yes. The Twitter fiasco. That's becoming far more common these days.
Which one?
I'm saying, right? It's becoming far more common as we are starting to see more accountability for public actions that we think are irrelevant to real life.
Yeah.
Right? It's on the internet. It doesn't matter. Guess what? The internet does matter. Yeah. What you say to people on the internet still hurts people's feelings.
Well, your brand matters.
Right.
Like, that's something that you have to represent yourself the way you want to be represented.
But on my Twitter account, I say everything I express under this account does not reflect my company or anyone else.
Well, I'm sure that's really going to help out.
But have you seen how many Twitter accounts actually say that?
Great.
I work for EA. I work for Microsoft. I work for X big company. My views and opinions are mine own. And, like, they put that there and I go,
it doesn't matter.
It don't matter.
The thing is, like, you can't separate yourself from what you do.
Yeah.
Okay? You are what you do. Yeah. Unfortunately, like, whether fair or not, you represent, you know, yes, you are an independent person, but you are representing your company when you work for your company.
Especially when you put that out as you're making a statement about the product your company is supplying, which he does here.
Okay.
Brandon.
Sorry. Adam Orth, talking about, there's been a lot of rumors the past little while that the Durango, or Xbox 361, or the
Xbox 720, whatever.
Or the it's called.
The next gen Xbox console.
The new Xbox, the Durango, as far as we know. It's not going to have backwards compatibility, and the rumor is that it's going to have always online requirement. Okay. Basically, it's going to require you to be online. If your internet goes down, it's going to shut off.
The console will not work.
Yeah, the console will just not work if it doesn't have an internet connection, which, you know, people are understandably upset about. Okay. Adam Orth responded a number of things on his Twitter account, things like, I don't get the drama around having an always online console. And he kept on adding this hashtag that says deal with it.
He was using the deal with it tag?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's right. That's why
it was a big deal.
That's why on Reddit they were totally making fun of the deal with it.
Exactly.
When people started
criticizing it, said Orth said those people should definitely when people called out his opinion, especially because a considerable percentage of the population has zero or poor internet coverage. I just thought there's a good amount of people.
Yeah. If you look at the map of the United States, let alone the world, the percentage of the population that has access to consistent internet, this is not necessarily 100% internet. This is, you can get it a reasonable
percent. This isn't broadband. Time, sometimes right? This is like DSL hookup sometimes.
You know, but you have access to it. You can get it in your home.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly small. And there's huge portions of their market that they are completely ignoring. And so people called him out on it, and his response
was, those people should definitely get with the times and get the internet. It's awesome. Adding, why on earth would I want to live in a place with poor internet coverage?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's the response. Are you kidding me? I didn't see any of the... I saw the first one.
That's why this has been such a big deal, is that it's like, how could you be so blind to say something like this? Like you just don't... Like, and again, he's an executive. He's an executive at Microsoft. Or he was.
Well,
okay. and
the thing that I get from this is that we've had some problems in our development cycles here at U within our cohort, where we're worried about the fact that we get so insulated, right? Mm-hmm. That we forget that, guess what? There's real life out there. Other people have other opinions about things. Mm. The only people buying our games is not going to be the 30 people in this room.
Yeah.
And so we need to take into consideration a real consumer. Yeah. And what that real person does with their time, and the fact that this isn't the most important thing they do with their lives.
No.
At all. This is entertainment. It's a luxury.
Exactly.
And the fact is it's a luxury a lot of people can't afford, especially when you're putting a $400 or $500 price tag on it and then telling them you also have to make sure that you pay $80+ a month and you have to have spotless internet all the time.
And if you want to play your 360 games, you pay an extra $100.
Yeah, that's right. The new add-on.
And so you have to pay for
there's more features. The rumor is that there's a new thing. You know, it's not going to be backwards compatible. So the rumor is they're going to sell, it's like an Xbox Mini, that it won't play any of your discs. Okay? It'll allow you to download any game that you owned on the Xbox and allow you to play it.
How does it determine that you own it?
This is all rumors. So
there's a lot of logistics that are going into this, and being head exec there, like, clearly he had some of these insulated problems that, looking at a real consumer, he doesn't realize that, guess what, you make enough money to buy one of these as a luxury. Most people in the U.S. don't necessarily make enough to make this purchase easily, especially in a recession. A lot of people don't have the internet access, much less the funds to pay for the internet access. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're working and graduating into an economy that is still in a severe recession. And people are cutting back on luxuries, you know, and people are starting to realize that credit doesn't work. And we're going to see the results of that in the next couple of years as our generation graduates and we're struggling to pay off our own debt. We're not going to be buying as much things because we're paying off things, I hope, right? Like, I hope we're more financially responsible than the last few years have been. But it's going to make a change in how we play games and how we have access to them. And not stepping outside of that world where everybody can afford all of these things, where you have access to all of these things, clearly hurt him. I mean, he doesn't have a job anymore. Yeah. He resigned because he is so far outside of what his consumer is.
Which, right? Just around that same time, there was an expected date, mid-April, of them talking. Like, there was never an official time. But
they pushed it back.
But they pushed it back another month.
It's May 21st.
I mean, who knows? And that date's still tentative.
Yeah.
It's not an official get ready for the show, but I don't know.
They're getting all this feedback on these rumors.
Well, you know what's really interesting to me is I go, you know what? I really don't care when iOS 7 comes. Really don't care when the next version of Google Android comes. That's really nice as a developer, because when it comes and it goes. Where the world is flipped upside down when new Xbox comes out and you're only making for consoles.
Well, the problem is, like, consoles, the reason why it works so well for games, and this is something that a lot of gamers don't realize that, you know, I don't realize, but you hear the argument PC versus console, right?
Yeah.
PC's like, PC's always current. It's always best. It's like, however, yes, it is. It's always the absolute best. Because, like, anytime you release any bit of hardware, it's outdated the day you release it.
Yeah.
Okay? That's fine. The problem is you're also inheriting multiple problems for multiple setups, for multiple issues. I have this driver set. I have this OS. I have this version of this OS. I have this graphics card, but not that one. It's the specific one that has this extra feature here. You know? All these little things that you have to deal with. Okay. Some people just want a game. Okay. They just want to put the disc in the machine, play the game.
Well, I think that the interesting thing is that board games, as much as some people are like, board games, I don't like board games, I happen to love them. It's always going to work.
Yeah.
I am never going to have lag. I'm never going to have a problem where, unless
there's
my game.
There's a lot of lag in board games.
There's a lot of lag in board games. You're like, Spencer, make your freaking game.
But that is a player-centric issue, not a product-centric issue, right?
The board game isn't the one lagging. It is the people playing.
And that's okay. That's expected. It's built not connected. In. But the actual physical product is going to be available to me at my home whenever I want it, and perhaps wherever I take it with me if I want to. And as we move into the future of digital production and distributing issues, that's not always going to be true.
Sure.
You know, how many times have you repurchased a game on a different platform? Because you can't play that game that you already bought on a different platform.
Oh, yeah.
And
we've ever thrown out an old PC disc.
Yeah. And, like, at some point in time, we're going to get tired of this model.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that I have started to evaluate which platform I think is going to be around the longest and buy them only for that one because I don't want my investment to go to waste in 5 months.
Well, that's why Steam's done so well,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The problem is not the platform necessarily, it's how fast that cycle changes, right?
Yes.
Because your tech moves so quickly. It's like if games, and there are games that were only playable and maybe have not, and apps that have not been updated since iOS 1 or 2. They don't work anymore. They don't function at all. And if the developers didn't take time to go in and fix it, you're never going to get that money back. You never get that game because they never fixed it. And that is why Steam is doing so well, is because they're proving themselves to be adaptable to the technology.
That's also the reason why console cycles have been, like, they've been getting longer. They used to be about 5 years. This last one, when did the Xbox come out?
8 years. Early. 8 years
ago?
2003. 2001.
Yeah,
no, it was 2003.
It was right
before I got here.
About 10 years. Okay, the 10-year cycle has been. They've been talking about that
for
a while.
Look at me, I did math.
Okay, math is hard, guys. Math is really hard. I don't like math.
All the hard.
Yeah, but it's amazing how almost. I mean, it feels earth shattering when a new console comes.
Because it is. Everyone, it's been a decade.
Well, I know.
We encounter the same problems when, like, Blu-ray is making a impact on digital entertainment right now.
Yeah.
And part of that is because of the PS3. And their players are now supported for the format. But CDs have been around since...
A long time.
90s. Long time. 90s. I remember when CDs didn't exist. I remember when we only had tapes.
You guys remember the attempt at mini discs?
And yeah,
I had mini discs.
I have some still in my house, and they're absolutely useless.
Yeah.
You know,
it's still
and
track.
But these forms, these platforms are outdated. You know, and at some point, all of the DVDs I have, I've stopped buying movies.
Yeah,
I've stopped buying DVDs. Mm-hmm. I don't buy them on Blu-ray even because I know that they're going to be outdated.
Yeah.
And so why would I build a Blu-ray collection when I know in another 2 years they're going to be like, guess what? You buy one USB drive and it holds every single movie you've ever
wanted. Oh, great.
Well, and you're just
you just got to download them all for $5.
That sounds convenient. Netflix.
Right, exactly. But people are still going to want to possess them. You know, like everybody's, I don't think we're going to move beyond ownership.
I think we will.
Not soon.
I think we, well, the thing, and this comes down to, as much as, you know, as much as I don't agree with the way his statements are working.
So you're predicting that entertainment is moving more towards service and away from product.
Oh yeah, by far.
I would agree with you in most places.
Yeah. Like that's why Netflix has been so successful, right? People, okay, if you make a service that's more convenient, it like gives you what you want, taking away certain benefits, but giving you ones that you didn't know you wanted, that's how you make your service work.
Sure. Well, and Netflix is doing that right now, yeah, producing new content that we're all very excited for.
Yeah.
And they still have limited streaming to certain things because of contracts, and that's the way it's going to be for a while.
Because you're adapting the market.
Yeah.
But they're not going anywhere. They're wildly successful.
And you look at League of Legends. You're all a fan of League of Legends.
What's this game? I've never heard of it.
Right? That is a service game. Yeah. It is not a product. You do not pay money for ownership of the disc.
If that thing disappears, all the money is gone.
Right. Every single service you paid for. But it's the same thing as I pay money to go eat at restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like that's wasted money because I'm paying for a service for somebody to cook me food and for me to eat it. Yep. And I really enjoy that. But
it's better than I cook.
Is really ephemeral, right? You eat it, it's gone. You don't get it back. You hope you don't get it back.
You don't want it.
You just don't. But as long as it feels like that service was compensatory for the amount you paid for it.
Oh, crap.
Gonna be good.
I'm so interrupting you because I just got a tweet from Ubisoft Montreal that said that Utah wins award for best creativity.
Yay!
Congrats, academia.
And the best use of theme.
Yes, we just won best use of theme.
Oh, pretty awesome.
Woohoo!
That's good because they've been announcing all sorts of good ones that we didn't get.
Yeah.
I switched over to Twitter, sorry.
Yeah, Twitter was faster. I was watching it and I was like, when do I interrupt Brianne? Because it's interesting what she's saying. I don't even know what she's saying. But
I know. I was watching it too and talking.
Best creativity.
Multitasking.
It's pretty awesome.
Bam.
What is best creativity?
Well, I'm sure we'll find out. Honestly, we'll have to do a follow-up to this Ubisoft one.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Of course, someone said creativity is the last legal weapon against competition. Which, I'm
not sure what they mean by that.
No, I like that statement. It's patents. Patents. Everyone can own a patent on what you have, but as long as you have just enough of a twist of your own originality in all those other patents.
Well,
it's usually a combination of patents. It's usually like a combination of tools.
Well, and patents are actually being used opposite of what they were originally.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to get into that conversation.
Yeah, but
they were used to promote creativity, what I'm saying, and now they're not. But they're to promote creativity.
Yeah.
They're to say, here's a standard, make a change on it. Absolutely. Do something interesting. Make progress in this technology, and we're stagnating.
Well, speaking of League of Legends, that's exactly the thing, right? League of Legends wasn't an original formula. It was done with Dota. Mm-hmm. It's been done for quite a while. Yeah. And these guys goes, you know what? We can make this game our own. Let's go try it. We'll make it into a service. We'll make it all this thing. You don't have to buy any other game to do it. You don't have to even buy the game. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
And they did. And it's worked out very well. I mean, that's what creativity is about. You know, but anyway, that comes down to that there's a lot of angles to the creativity versus corporate, you know, everything. And I don't think we can possibly identify all of them. Yeah. You know, there's so many things to consider.
True.
So do we have a couple more things, or are we about done?
We're running out of time, but I'm going to mention this anyway. Okay. Batman Arkham Origins is coming out this year.
Oh, God.
Just because the number of times that I mentioned Arkham City
anything.
On this podcast.
Here's what I hate about it.
They should make that game, Batman Arkham Anything.
It will be. Yeah. Arkham Universe.
what pisses me off about it is he's absolutely right. Like, it is one of the pinnacle games of this kind of generation. It's just
a great game. If you want to study design of just games in general, it's a wonderful study of how games work and how games need to be developed with care and, you know, concern for the player as well as the source material and just like how to immerse the player, how to make them feel empowered amazingly and, you know, beyond just like, I don't want to say just a shooter because a shooter does that, but this is unique. It still stands as a unique testament to a number of different things.
Right. All right, so
go back to old podcasts. Listen about that.
All right, so came in. Shine from ETS. I'm guessing that's the name of the school. Wins the 2013 Game On competition.
Go Shine.
Go Shine. So we'll see.
Shine on.
I don't remember.
So we'll see which students of ours get to go.
Yeah. So at least two of our students will get to go, which is really exciting.
we've heard. We'll see if that happens. And hopefully we'll be able to participate next year if they can figure out a more financially feasible way to do it.
Yeah, and that was really generous of them to take it on. So, Ashley.
Yeah?
If someone wanted to get a hold of us at Confessions of a Game Dev Podcast, how would they do that on Twitter?
At Game Dev Confess.
What?
Whoa!
It's like you've been here.
Brianne, if we wanted to email us...
Wait, you guys are on the internet?
We're on the internet.
That's crazy!
The internet. It's all of the internet.
Guys, brain bomb being
that do you guys have, like, a brand?
It's a brand.
It's that thing you put on a cow.
That's the thing you put on.
Also, you should get one of those. A cow, not
we
a brand.
We have a cow brand.
Wait, I need to get a cow?
A guy on
so Game Dev Confess
is on fire.
At, I don't know.
Gmail. Come on.
Oh, come on. You don't have like a utah.edu you know, account? Because you totally should.
No, we should.
No, you know,
we don't. We are not affiliated.
In any way.
On purpose. As Rachel was painfully... making
about.
Sure.
Oh, gosh.
Maybe explicit about.
No, unfortunately, we are all being cultured through the University of Utah, but we are not at all affiliated in any
We're
other
separate.
Way.
Which is good.
Which is actually why I hate using my email address at utah.edu.
Oh, I don't. Ever.
Because I don't ever plan on living there or working there the rest of my life. So why would I want to have an email address from there? Because as soon as people, like, it's the same thing with a phone number, right? Why do I want to change my phone number if I know I don't have to? Just give me my Gmail account.
Area codes are becoming irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
they are.
Because you can just transfer. Well, yeah, people aren't using cell phones anymore. I mean, not, people aren't
landlines.
Using landlines. Only using cell
what?
Phones anymore.
My
no more cell phones.
Check this thing on the ground.
Right. Now,
Skype is the thing.
Do you guys have a landline for Game Dev Confess?
We don't.
It is
we don't even have a cell phone.
800 Game Dev Confess.
Really? Oh, that's new on me.
I'm so getting it.
And if you want to go to our website, gamedevconfess.com.
Yeah, facebook.com/something.
It's like Game Dev Confess or something like everything else. We
well, thank you for listening. If you hadn't noticed already, Clark Stacey, who I promised last week would be on the podcast, he is not here. And
what?
We're in talks with him. Hopefully we'll be able to get him on sooner than later. But
it's been a good chat.
Been a good chat. Maybe I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about having a legal chat. So if anyone knows any... I know a
you
guy
know a legal
from
guy.
IGDA that he would be awesome to talk to.
We may arrange that.
He's a guy that I did a presentation last year, and I made a joke about suits and devs, and he literally came to the IGDA meeting in a suit. And he introduces me, and he's himself to me, and he's like, just so you know, I'm actually a lawyer, but I want to be a game dev. And he totally has a law degree and everything. He works at a law firm. But, like, he, for some reason, hates the amount of money that they throw at him and the Beamer that he drives.
It's a rough life.
He wants to be a game developer. So maybe we'll have to bring him on because I've had some good discussions about copyright and IP law with him.
It'd be cool.
We'll see if we can track him down. Thanks for listening.
Hey.
Get back to playing Bioshock, y'all.
Oh, Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, can we have a spoiler cast?
Oh my goodness.
A spoiler cast.
I want to so bad.
Well, yeah, I really have to.